everyone. Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 155, in our rewatch of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. This week, we are looking at episodes 19 and 20 of season 2. That's I Only Have Eyes for You and Go Fish, the penultimate episodes for us for all of season 2. And as you will be hearing from my voice, I am not Karen or Selena. Sorry about that. This is Natalie. I'm hosting this week because neither of our hosts are available for various reasons. So here I am, a previous host from a previous year gone by, and hopefully that's fine with everyone. This week, our super fans are myself and Caitlin. So hello to Caitlin. And our newbies are Brittany and Danielle. So Danielle is obviously not one of our regular hosts, but she's been following Rewatchable along with Buffy as a newbie and is standing in as a new voice on the show today because, again, we had some real problems lining up our recording this week. So hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi. Danielle, have you stood in before on any season one episodes or earlier this season, or is this the first time you've stood in?
This is my first Buffy episode, I believe, as far as I can remember.
Yeah, and which series were you on before for Rewatchable?
I did Veronica Mars, Pushing Daisies, and Freaks and Geeks.
Cool. So if anyone listened to those ones, obviously they'll know Danielle is one of our Rewatchable community hosts at large. If not, you can go back and listen to those shows if you want to follow along with one of our past series. If you want to reach us to talk about the show, you can email us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet us at re_watchable. You can comment on this post on hyperbole.com, our hosting parent website, or you can join us on our Tumblr, which is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com, which I should probably follow. I don't follow the Tumblr, so
it's just
that's
rude.
Not
I mean, it's
good
a lot
news.
Of my work put to waste. Actually, I don't update it as much as I should. It's okay.
You don't update it as much as you did.
But now that you're threatening to follow, I might.
I'll follow. Okay. So we'll do some fun facts just so everyone knows our voices as we go on the through the show. So I'm not sure, Danielle, I'm not sure if you've been on since we've introduced this this segment, but we just say, you know, our name and then something random. Sometimes it's along a theme, sometimes it's completely made up on the spot. But who would like to go first? Does anyone have a good fun fact this week?
I'll go. I have a fun one. It's actually
right.
Fun. Cool. So, I'm Brittany, and I've been really sick all week, but on Thursday, I got a surprise at our office because we got a Mrs. Pac-Man arcade machine, and it's been a lot of fun to be at work, even when you have a fever and are on a lot of antibiotics. So,
I've been
playing Mrs. Pac-Man, and there are a ton of other games on there that are basically all the same games. Like, there's this game that I really like now called Burger Time, where, like, you're trying to, like, it's like Donkey Kong style, where, like, you're trying to go.
Oh, my God, that was my jam
it's
when
so
I was a kid.
Cool. It's like you've got a bun and then a patty and then some, like, lettuce, and then you have to, like, beat it down to make the burgers, and it's so much fun.
That game is my jam.
Oh, I'm so glad someone else in the world knows about it, because it's like, I saw it and I'm like, I'm going to play this game, and then I only ever want to play that game. So that's my fun fact. It's been pretty cool to be in my office this week.
I'll go next, because I have a computer game related fact now that you've brought it up. So I'm Natalie. I'm a super fan, obviously, if you've been hanging out with us. My fun fact is that I have never been able to play any video game or computer game or any game involving hands and eyes in my entire life. The last game I remember playing or owning was Commander Keen, which I don't know if anyone listening to this knows what that is, but it was a 90s computer game with a little guy. And I think I had like one or two levels of that. It was my brother's. And I used to play the Lara Croft Tomb Raider, just the intro training part through her house, not the game at all. So that is my total extent with any kind of computer game, phone game, arcade game, play, you know, console game. I cannot game at all. I just can't do it. So I'm not much fun, I guess, but that's my circumstance with gaming, I guess. So I'm happy for you, Brittany, but if that was in my office, I would literally ignore it and never look at it.
Okay, I'll go next. I'm Caitlin. I'm the other super fan, and my fun fact is not video game related. Mine is that I spent the entire day before we recorded on the Blue Ridge Scenic Railway, which I live in Georgia. So you go up to Blue Ridge, Georgia, which is this town really far north, close to the Tennessee border. It has a population of like 1,200. And you get on this train that rides like, I don't know, 15 miles an hour through this really picturesque mountain track about an hour to this town that's literally on the border of Tennessee and Georgia. So there's a spot in the town that you can stand on the border between Georgia and Tennessee. So you go with the really beautiful scenery and everything, and it goes along a river. It's really pretty. And then you go and spend a couple hours in the town and then take the hour ride back to Blue Ridge. And then we went home. So I spent the day with some beautiful mountain scenery.
That's nice.
That sounds amazing.
Were you taking tourists there or just like doing it for yourself, or is this like a local attraction?
We did it because my sister and niece are visiting from Australia and they are leaving on Monday. And that was something that they were kind of looking for things to do in the area. And that came up as a thing to do. So my mother and I and my niece and my sister went.
Cool. That's nice. Okay. Danielle, it's on you.
Oh, man. My turn. Let's see. Oh, my fun fact is that I went to Disneyland for the first time in my life last weekend. And not only that, but I got to meet Kyle for the first time ever in person. He's also formerly of Rewatchable. So that was really fun.
That's cool. Ariana, who is also a
Rewatchable.
Yeah, more importantly than Kyle. God.
He's going to kill me.
Yeah, it's okay. I'll edit this all together to make it sound like you totally mentioned her first.
I thought I'd mention Kyle because it's the first time, but like, I love Ariana so much. I was standing in the middle of this, like, it's called Old Town in San Diego. It's like a sort of like a state park sort of thing. And like, I was standing in the middle of the road, just like looking for her. And I saw her like, I don't know, a little bit far away from me. And I just ran at her and was like screaming, like, I see you. And all of these people are like staring at me strangely, but she didn't hear me until I got really close. So that's another fun fact. I run at people saying, I see you until they see me.
I think Karen and I, the first time we met in person, did running and yelling in the middle of Port Authority in New York. So that was that was good. So, yeah, we're very demonstrative here on Rewatchable.
Since the last time I've been on, I've met Mitch. So that's another Rewatchable
meeting. Oh, my God, it's, like, crazy.
It's so fun to meet in person. Like, I love talking to everybody. And, like, I'm so happy to be back on Rewatchable. But, like, meeting people in person is so crazy. Yeah. It's like, you actually exist.
I told Mitch, I was like, I kind of half expected you to, like, be a puppet. But he wasn't a puppet. He was a real person.
More like a robot without real people.
Like a Muppet, you know? He just, like...
I think the first time I met Mitch, we went to see Avenue Q. So there's puppets. Wow, it's like... so cyclical. Anyway, let's move on. So in this episode, the ghosts of Homecoming's past come back to unleash Moses' five deadly plagues on Sunnydale. I'm going to stop you right there. It was not homecoming. It was Sadie Hawkins' dance. Thank you very much. When the spirit of a high school student reenacts the murder-suicide of his teacher lover, Buffy and Angel have a gender-bent possession to remember. Meanwhile, Drusilla loves her new fairy castle and Spike is up to something. Okay, succinct to the point, I guess. Right, so let's go through this episode's situation. This is one of the most, I think, not, I don't want to say romantic, but like I did my episode for, I did my article for Valentine's Day about Buffy, and you know how love makes you do the wacky and all of these sort of really dark, like, oh, this is driven by love, like crazy episodes that have been of Buffy. This one's pretty high up there in terms of that kind of listing. And it definitely delves into, like, how love makes you do the wacky. And, yeah, features basically this flashback plot of ghosts, these poltergeists, or, you know, at least one poltergeist who is reenacting this death. And basically starts possessing different people who happen to get in his way in the school. I guess it's like people who come to the spot of the hallway where it originally happened. And it happens to a couple of pairs of people. We see it happen to a boyfriend and girlfriend, and Buffy stops them before anything happens. And then it happens again to a random teacher and janitor who are both in the hallway, and no one was there to stop it, and so the poltergeist gun really does shoot the teacher, and then she dies, basically, and then the gun vanishes. So that's a pretty horrible circumstance to be in. I don't know, just, I'd like to go around and just talk about how everyone feels about this kind of episode and this kind of, like, I guess, this kind of portrayal of love, or if you kind of expected this kind of mythology to, you know, or supernatural power to exist within Buffy. So I don't know, Caitlin, as a super fan, like what's your kind of thoughts about this episode? When you think about this episode, is it an affecting one for you, or is it a sort of monster of the week one that you don't think about that much?
I mean, I feel like with the parallels between the couples with James and Grace and Buffy and Angel, like, it's really hard not to see it as a more mythologically driven episode, even though it ends up, like, kind of technically being monster of the week. It really does, like, give us looks into what's going on specifically. It's so hard to get into the characters' heads sometimes, so we do get a new look. We get these obvious and an interesting, I think, parallels, and kind of is pushing forward to the last two episodes of the season. So I think this is a really intriguing setup for whatever's going to happen in the finale. So I like this one a lot. I think it's interesting. There's some really kind of icky things going on, but it's just interesting to kind of delve into, I think.
Yeah. Brittany, how about you, like, seeing this for the first time? How did you feel about this one? I know you were not on for Passion, which you had a lot of thoughts about.
I can't talk about it anymore. I've been talking about it for 3 weeks.
For Passion.
Yes.
Sorry. And this is kind of a direct follow-up. I think this is more of a direct follow-up to Passion than, like, Killed by Death was. So, yeah, Passion, Killed by Death, this one. This is the, you know, the next one, really, where you have kind of, you know, Giles and his, you know, thoughts about Jenny and, like, you know, the actual return to the story of the main characters, as opposed to Killed by Death, which really is a monster of the week episode. So, yeah, how are you feeling about this one in the scope of the bigger story that's been going on?
Well, at first I thought it was definitely going to be more of a monster of the week, less emotional, not focusing on, like, the bigger, like, story arc that was going on throughout season two, but then I realized, like you were saying, like, oh, that's right. I kind of, like, pushed Killed by Death out of my mind because, A, the monster was really creepy, and, B, I still really only ever wanted to talk about Passion till the end of time. And then this episode came, and I was like, oh, we're definitely dealing with Monster of the Week just the way it started, and then you kind of, like, with the yearbook thing, and I'm like, okay, we're going to find out who this is. They're going to stop it. That'll be the end of it. But then you have, like, all these beats with Giles and Buffy and then Angel and Drew shows up, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is definitely a mythology episode. And I was grateful for that because, while it was Monster of the Week, I liked having a little bit more built into the world before we have the two-part finale coming up. And I didn't want to have three Monster of the Weeks in a row and then have to get back into it to feel like the story was continuing for the final two episodes. So I actually really liked this episode a lot. I rewatched the whole thing again today. I watched it 2 weeks ago, but then I rewatched this one today and I skimmed through Go Fish before coming back on.
Danielle, how do you feel? I mean, you've obviously not been on Buffy yet, but you've been following along with us. So at this point in the season, like, you know, do you want to give us a very brief summary of how, you know, season two has been going for you, what with Angel and, like, you know, how this has all seemed for you as a new viewer and how this episode tied into it?
Wow, that's a lot.
Well, I mean, you know,
Yeah, no.
30 seconds, go.
No. I've been really enjoying season two. I really liked the sort of bait and switch for the villain of season two. It feels to me like there were even maybe two baits and switches. I don't know if that's plural. I both words. With Angel ending up being the villain. So I'm really enjoying that dynamic and kind of trying to see him differently. But we also see him through the eyes of Buffy, and that's kind of how we're going along. And I really like that. And I thought that this one seems like one of the darker episodes of this season. Mm. I wasn't expecting it to be as intense because, I mean, it's hard not to see the Netflix descriptions as you kind of going along. And I know that, like, a few people have been burned by them before, and I try to look away. But, like, I saw something about, like, a 1950s ghost. So I had an idea of where this episode might have been going, but it was a lot more than what I thought it was going to be in a good way. But I was interested to see a sort of slightly Monster of the Week episode, but it wasn't a monster. It was more of a spirit, which I don't equate as being quite the same thing, at least when it comes to Buffy. It was interesting to see them dealing with something that you cannot physically punch in the face, I guess, is the best way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, so just to kind of summarize, I guess, what happened in the end is that it's never really explained why I think, right now is the first time that this spirit is coming back. Is it only because there's a Sadie Hawkins dance? It's like, do they have that every year? Is it the first Sadie Hawkins dance since that fateful night in the 50s? It's not like the 50th year anniversary or something. So it's never really super clear why this is the first moment that these reenactments have happened, that it doesn't happen like every year or every 10 years or something. But the point is, you know, it's doomed to repeat itself over and over. But due to the fact that they possess Buffy and Angel, with Buffy as James and Angel as Grace, Grace is able to sort of speak to James after her own death and be like, hey, it's okay, I know what happened, like, and allow the poltergeist that freedom, which is obviously only possible because Angel survives the gunshot death. So that's a really clever twist. And I just remember being very broken up by, you know, seeing Buffy and Angel, like, in their current state, like, you know, their current state of, like, trauma and hating each other and loving each other. And, you know, because one thing is very clear, like, with all of these episodes surrounding Valentine's Day, with all of these episodes, you know, seeing Spike and Drew and Angel together as well, Angel still loves Buffy. He's just crazy as shit, and this is how he shows it. Like, you know, I'm not saying it's a good thing, but, you know, I think one of the biggest things with what's been happening with Angelus, and that you kind of see it through Spike's eyes, is that Angel is not a person anymore. Like, Spike is sitting there in his wheelchair and he's like, really? It's very, very obvious in that Valentine's episode where, like, you know, he gets Drew a necklace and Angel gets her, like, a still beating heart. And it's like, Spike is such a person, soul or no soul, but Angel, he's just looking at him going, like, you are just, like, this deranged, like, you know, everything's getting screwed up for us because you've got a screw loose because you're not, like, you're not in any way rational. Like, you're just this crazy monster, basically, which, but this episode we get to go back to seeing sort of Angel as, like, you know, tender and kind, like, because he's being possessed by the demon, I guess. Oh, not the demon, the spirit of Grace. And it's a real punch in the face, like, to anyone who kind of ships Buffy and Angel, of, like, they're in such a terrible state, but we get that moment of them sort of talking to each other. It's not really them, but sort of it's meant to be a parallel of their situation with, you know, Buffy having the guilt about having ruined, killed Angel, like, who Angel was, by her rash actions of sex. So, that's obviously the most important part of this episode, is that conversation between them and what kind of closure it gives to Buffy and what it means for her to hear Angel as himself saying that, even though it's sort of not really him. So, I don't know, it's all very traumatic, I think. But yeah, I don't know, Caitlin, you might be able to sort of say this better than I. Like, what do you think this kind of, I guess, means for Buffy now, like, and Buffy as a person, like, this having this experience with Angel at, you know, after all that they've been through in this season?
Oh, such a good question. I feel like in some ways it gives a little sense of closure, like, you know, Giles tells her, it wasn't your fault, like, this stuff happened, like, no one could have known what was going to happen. So hearing it from, like, as Grace basically says, like, it was an accident sort of thing, it's not your fault, I think helps in a way of closure, in a sense, which might help her move forward. But I think at the same time, of once the possession is over, that kind of opens the wound even more, because there's a violation there of being possessed by these spirits and then having them be so close to the situation you're dealing with. And it's just, it's very visceral, but I feel like if anything, it helps her move on a little bit. Like, it maybe gives her permission to forgive herself for what happened, the way she's been feeling guilt, and then gives her permission, essentially, from herself to move forward and do whatever needs to be done.
Yeah, because obviously the whole episode is her, you know, throwing all this hate on James because of, you know, she sees herself in the situation of, like, you know, no, he, you know, he deserves nothing and blah, blah. And obviously, I mean, it's a pretty, you know, in one way it's a fair call, especially if you thought it was a straight-up murder-suicide, because we do see in the eventual flashback that, yes, he was wielding a gun at her. Not great. And, yes, he was threatening her, but the gun went off by accident. It wasn't... There's a hairline of sort of accident culpability there that apparently Grace seems to be okay with. But yeah, Buffy, you know, sort of spends the whole episode being really harsh about the situation, which is obviously a reflection of herself. And the everyone else is kind of like, oh, how sad for them. And she's just like, yeah, sad for her. He sucks. And I think that this is a really interesting thing to talk about in a minute, because I don't know, just the morality of that situation. But I also wanted to ask the newbies, now that we've had kind of Crazy Angel, and now that we saw basically a return to good Angel, even though he's being possessed, those words really could have come from Angel if he knew, you know, what was going on. If he said, if he, as his soul self, had a chance to talk to Buffy now, do you like Crazy Angel better, or do you want him to be good again?
Crazy Angel forever. I'm so into it. I love Angelus. He's so great and so, so awful. And I don't know what this turn in me has been for, like, I discussed this with my coworker yesterday at length. I was like, I don't know what this, like, deal is with me. I am so obsessed with villains lately. I just, like, want to watch shows about awful people. Like, not even, like, to where they're redeemed. I just love a really good, like, villain. And I think that when Angelus switched, like, when he lost his soul, I was like, this is the character that I love. Like, this is the character I want all villains to live up to, because he's so great. And I just love every scene that he's in, even though he's awful. I just love it. I think it's so well done. Ugh.
It is.
Which and is I why really... I never want to watch the spinoff called Angel, because if it was called Angelus, sign me up. I'd be watching it. Don't care. Don't care what part of Buffy we're in. I would have binged that in a day. But since it's called Angel, I have, like, zero desire to watch it.
Ah, rude. Don't you worry. Don't you worry about Angel, Brittany. We'll talk about that later. But, yeah, Danielle, how do you feel about Angel versus Angelus now that we've kind of had a taste of the good again?
I'm so torn, because I love him. I love Angelus for all of the reasons that, like, Brittany loves him. Like, he's crazy, and his craziness is just so interesting because you don't know what he's going to do next. And his motivations are very, like, interesting to just kind of sit there and soak in. But, like, I fall for main leaning men so bad. it's really bad. It's so bad. So I kind of miss the softer Angel, but not the one who would, like, brood in a corner all the time and give out random warnings. If there was somewhere slightly in the middle of that, I would be golden, I guess, is what I'm saying. So I don't have an opinion, or I have too much of an opinion.
I feel sad for them. Like, I feel sad for them in the way that, you know, I feel sad for Grace and James, in that, I don't know, it's just a terrible situation, really, and it's so miserable and depressing and just horrible. And I sort of want to talk about that. I want to talk about the actual Grace and James scenario and the way that everyone reacts to it. Because I'll tell you this, Buffy is a problematic show for me, because I watched it when I was maybe 14, 15, and a lot of the declarations in it, a lot of the behavior of some of the characters is stuff that I really took to heart in a way that was not very healthy, like in a way that was very like I would hold this idea up of, like, that is what people do for love, that's good. And then I'm watching this again, and I'm like, no, everyone in this episode is saying how unhealthy and terrible that was, you know? Like Xander and Buffy and everyone is talking about, like, the actual actions, the behavior, as terrible. And it is. But apparently, as a 14-year-old, I was just like, yeah, I'm just like that. I feel things that much. And, I mean, I suppose that's the point. Like, he was a teenager, and he was caught up in it, not really to know, really knowing how to be healthier about love. But I don't know. It's interesting. Is there anything that you've sort of gone back and watched, whether it's, you know, obviously not Buffy for the newbies, but that you've watched that you remember as a younger person, like, getting one message for it and then watching it later and being like, oh no, it was exactly the opposite of that. And I was just too caught up in whoever I was at that point, and I took the wrong thing away from it, basically. I don't know. Does that make sense? Is what I'm saying making sense? I don't know. I'm rambling.
Total sense. Yeah. I know that it has happened to me. I just can't think of any particular instance at the moment.
Well, there's several aspects of Buffy that I know that's happened to me with, like, a lot, like, you know, and I don't know if I come down as harshly now as Buffy does on the, you know, no, you're stupid, you suck, you know, but there was definitely some, you know, some compassion from some characters about James and Grace's scenario, and then some were like, you know, Buffy was completely unforgiving about it until she lived through it. But I don't know, Caitlin, when did you first watch Buffy? Like, you're quite a rational person. I feel like you maybe didn't experience the same problems I did. You know that I'm insane, so. Yeah.
I watched Buffy when I was very young, so I was not, I guess, internalizing ideas about romance at that age. So it was never something that was like, yeah, that's what I aspire to in my life at all. Like, it was just not a time that that was something that was in my hemisphere of interest at all. So I cannot say that that was something that affected my views on relationships.
Probably for the best. I can't hammer home how much it really did for me in a way that's very damaging. So
I do want to say, though, in terms of this episode, I kind of was not as in the same camp as Buffy as like maybe you were now that you were rewatching it. I was kind of feeling more towards Xander and Willow with Buffy in the back of my mind, just because I felt like there was something else going on. Like, I thought there was going to be some sort of other reveal happening to completely skew the way that we saw the murder rather than just the gun went off by itself. Like, when we saw James flash or through a Buffy vision, when he turned into a sort of skeleton, I thought something like supernatural was going on at that point and not just in the vision. So that completely skewed the way that I saw the situation between James and Grace.
So just with that point about the romance of it all, whether this is like a romantic ideal or like a, you know, gross situation to dismiss, or anything that you've, you know, found formative in the past and then been like, ooh, that was a problem. Brittany, have you sort of had any experiences like that? Like, or how did you sort of see the romantic element of this episode?
Meaning, have I ever had a crush on my teacher or been a teacher and had a crush on my student?
No.
Oh, yes, do tell, Brittany.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about that. No, I meant, you know, have you ever had, you know, an experience with TV or a movie where you've, like,
oh,
taken
that question. Okay. Yeah.
Or just, if not, like, how, you know, how Buffy saw it versus how the others saw it and, you know, whether this is romantic or whether this is, like, sick, basically.
I didn't watch a lot of stuff when I was, like, at an age where it was, like, oh, this is the ideal relationship. This is what I should be opposed to. This is what I should, like, I just, like, that, all that stuff, like, went over my head. I was so into, like, watching how friendships were portrayed on TV, which kind of, I guess, explains why I'm still single. So I was like, yeah, everyone's friends all the time. Like, who cares about the people who are in and out of love because all they do is make up and break up and hate each other and cause problems for every friend group that they're involved in. So no one wants to be those people.
I wish I'd had your life.
that was like my, like, what I like to focus on. But I guess from Buffy's point of view in this episode, I think she's just so opposed to everyone being in love that it doesn't matter what the relationship is. Like, she just, like, thinks, like, if anyone showed any sign of trying to connect with another human being on an emotional level, she just wants nothing to do with it. So I don't know if her, like, emotions in this episode were, like, tainted by her still trying to get over Angel in a way. But I that's how I took it. And then when she was, like, finally in the James position of seeing, like, why are you suddenly changing your mind? Why are you, like, turning into this person? I think that that was really what drove that point home for me. We're like, she's not really disgusted by the fact that it's a student, she's a teacher. It's the fact that, like, this parallel, like Caitlin was pointing out, is, like, so strong. Like, this, yes, this person's older. Angel's technically, like, hundreds of years older than Buffy. And, you know, it's like, it doesn't, it looks weird on the surface because she's a teacher, he's a student, he's a vampire, she's a vampire slayer, And then she finally just gets to, like, say what she's feeling, like, out loud. Like, why are you changing? And this person's apologizing and being defensive about it. I loved all of that so much that I think that I wasn't really focused on what Buffy's reaction was as, like, disgust or whatever. It was just more of a personal thing. Like, she just can't. It wouldn't have mattered who the relationship was between. She wouldn't have taken it well.
Yeah.
That was a very long-winded way to get to that point.
No, that's true. I'm just really stuck on the fact that, like, you know, that they sit there in the episode and Xander's like, you know, I think I put it as my quote, like, he killed another person, then he killed himself. Two of the dumbest things you can do and all of that kind of stuff. Whereas for some reason, took away from this episode and took away from a few other parts of Buffy that, like, oh, dying and violence, they're really good things for love. Like,
oh, no, that's, Natalie. That's the top Natalie,
level
no.
of that.
No.
Pardon?
Oh, no.
We're past that now, Brittany. But, like, from, like 15 to 21, bit shaky. We're past that now, thank God. But there was definitely, yeah, some ideas of the romanticism of that kind of behavior and, I don't know where the episode sort of ended up falling, you know, objectively, whether this did romanticize that kind of behavior or whether it portrayed enough that it was not great. So, I mean, seeing as that he's like a vengeful poltergeist, you know, that's killing other people and all of that kind of stuff, I think we could probably say that it's not great. So let's talk a little bit about the supernatural you know, poltergeist effects that happened. So basically there was, aside from the vanishing gun that really had the power to kill people, there was all of these plagues, there was the snakes and the hornets and all of that kind of stuff. So did anyone particularly like or hate any of these vengeful acts that were going on in the school? Any particular... you know, loved this special effect. Oh my God, I hate snakes. I'm freaked out. Hated this. It looked terrible. Like, Caitlin, any thoughts about any of that kind of supernatural hooey that was going on in the episode?
I mean, other than the fact that that's not really what a poltergeist is.
Yeah, like, I don't know really why all that stuff was happening either. Like, I couldn't really tell you why all of that stuff was happening.
It seemed so random. Like, the snakes were so random, they didn't fit into anything at all.
Like, I can deal with it as, like, a vengeful spirit thing. Like, coming from my supernatural background, I can come from it with that aspect and just be like, his rage is manifesting in these things that terrify other people. Something like that. But like a poltergeist is like technically a spirit that is like causing damage for the fun of it, sort of thing, is like mischievous because that's like
what it does.
Fun to them, sort of thing. So that's not really how James
what
was doing.
Yeah,
he was like, the way I took it was just like the manifestation of like his pain and rage and all that became like these horrifying things to other people.
Speaking of that whole element, Danielle, what was it that you were saying about the looking for the physical bodies? Is that another bit of mythology that exists elsewhere? I'm not quite sure.
I mean, yes. Okay, so I am educated in the same way as Caitlin is in that, like, I've watched Supernatural, the TV show, since it started. And so my basis for anything supernatural related is from that show. And when anything ever happens with a spirit, and I feel like this is in other parts of culture too, but if you have a spirit, you want to look for the body. And in that show, they take the body, they salt and they burn the bones in order to get rid of anything that is keeping that spirit tied to the physical realm. Some interesting way that was tied to mythology in some way to get rid of the ghost rather than just Buffy walking into the school and going through the whole cycle. Like, I thought there was going to be something more to it, something like you get rid of a werewolf with a silver bullet, you get rid of ghosts by getting their bodies, their physical bodies.
No, fair enough. I don't know. I do not know Supernatural, so I'm not quite, I don't have that I guess, that hang up or that preconception. But they did have to, you know, do stuff with the master's bones to stop him rising again and stuff like that. So,
right.
I don't know. Yeah. There's some precedent for the physical body needing to be disassembled or whatever. Brittany, did you have any particular thoughts about, you know, hornets or Willow getting sucked into hell or any of those kind of...
I had a problem with the arm in Xander's locker.
Yeah, that was really confusing.
That was terrifying. And then they just, like, brush it off. Like, they walk into the library and tell everyone and no one cares. I'm like...
They're like, that's
this is
small
something
potatoes.
You should probably look into.
That's just everyday occurrence on the Hellmouth, whatever.
I mean, I get that to an extent, but like...
Yeah, speaking of Giles, at first he's quite excited about, like, he's been really excited about some of the monsters lately. He's like, ooh, werewolves, one of the classics. And now in this episode where he gets a ghost, he's like, ooh, it's quite fascinating. Like, he's quite excited by some of these monsters of the week,
well,
which is a bit...
because he thinks it's Jenny.
Yes, that's the next step. Yes, that's what I'm about to talk about. And he sort of starts thinking immediately, obviously, there's an angry ghost here at the school. It's Jenny. I get to talk to Jenny. And so, I don't know, how realistic was this, like, this leap for him? Or how did you feel about him sort of getting hung up on this? Brittany, you are our resident. I mean, everyone loves Giles, but I know that you have got some constant thoughts about this kind of thing. So how did you feel about the way that Giles was acting in terms of thinking it was Jenny?
I mean, it made perfect sense. All of, like, he's only looking for the smallest thread that would connect him to Jenny or connect anything that's going on at the Hellmouth to Jenny. And this made perfect sense. There's someone haunting the school. It's around the area. Jenny was killed inside the school, so naturally her spirit would be trapped here. And he just wants to find, like, he doesn't want anyone's help because he doesn't want to tell anyone really too much that he, like, you know, he doesn't want anyone else getting to Jenny before he can. So, I mean, it was really sad when he's just in the library by himself and he's just, they have to kind of solve this one on their own and look into the exorcism and set it up. And Giles is just, like, you know, doing his own thing this whole time. And it made perfect sense for him. This is helping him grieve, but it's not helping him move on in a way.
Yeah. And I always really love the bit where, like, he kind of realizes it's not her, or when Willow convinces it, when she's getting sucked down the thing, and then she's like, come on, Giles, Jenny would never be this mean, like, mm-hmm. as in, like, this is not what the spirit of Jenny would do if it was her. So that was sad, but, yeah. I think the person I'm saddest for, though, is the janitor who literally killed someone. It's not his fault at all, but how do you prove that to the regular law enforcement system?
Well, without a weapon and no witnesses. Like, the gun disappeared after he shot her because it was like a spirit gun.
Yeah.
So they said they looked for the gun. So maybe it'll be hard to convict him because there were no witnesses and there's no weapon.
And hopefully there's no security camera.
Yeah, because this was the mid-90s.
Well, hopefully.
I do feel sad too, because that was totally not his fault.
Yeah, hopefully he's okay. You know, and stuff like that. So I hope that he's okay. So I don't know, does anyone else have anything particular to say about the Angel and Buffy and James and Grace story? There's a little bit more about Spike and Drew and Angel that we'll talk about, but just the Angel and the main plot of this kind of romantic murder, suicide, possession situation. Any further thoughts?
I have a question for the newbies after this, because kind of the way that Buffy and Angel help the spirits move on, essentially, do you think that this means that there is hope for them at all?
Ugh, I hope not.
You're so mean.
I'm not mean. I really like what we got going on right now. And also, I really like that. I like the power position between Spike and Angelus right now, where Spike has become more human, and
yeah.
Angelus is just so far gone that I really like, because Spike was the big bad, and he was like this person who like could clearly have no soul except for dealing with Drew was the only time we saw any sense of humanity. But now it's sort of like these two are going to go at it because we're going to talk about this in a sec, but like, I just don't want to lose Angelus. And if we lose Angelus, then like Buffy and Angel become a thing again. And then, all right, I would be fine with it, but then we got to get rid of Angel because I don't know if I could deal with him after knowing what he could be.
After knowing how fantastic he is as a villain. Once again, I will sort of say that I really love Boreanaz as an actor. Like, you know, that, you know, you see Angel at first and you're like, is this just like a weak actor being like just this wet, like, is this his only skill being this mopey, wet weirdo? And then you get Angelus and you get kind of the self-aware Angel as well. And you see that, you know, the humor and the range that he has as an actor. So I do appreciate that. But I hate Angelus. Like, I appreciate the quality of it, but I hate him so much.
Oh, so good.
Danielle, how about you with Caitlin's theories?
I want to say yes, but I don't know if it would cheapen this moment to have them get back together, sort of, because it does feel like a sort of reconciliation for them, even though they are just repeating a scene that had happened 50 years or whatever previously, because it was like none of this was anyone's fault. It just kind of happened and we have to move on. And so I feel like this scene is too powerful for them to go back on it. Even though, I mean, I'm always pushing for main couples to get back together because I never think out of the box. So I do enjoy them together, but I...
How did you guys feel about that actual scene of you know, Buffy, of Sarah Michelle Gellar acting as James and sort of, and Boreanaz acting as like Grace and sort of being soft and forgiving? Like, how did you feel about the performances? Do you think it worked or do you think it was not that great?
I loved it. Yeah. I was taken aback at first, actually, because I wasn't expecting the swap.
Yeah.
At all. And I think I was...
even they say, they're like, oh, she's walking in there to get shot. And right. Stuff like that. They think that she was going to be the victim. But yeah.
And I really enjoy that she wasn't. And up until that point, I was sort of seeing the parallels the way that they had set it up previously with Buffy and Grace and James and Angel. I was seeing those parallels. But as soon as they turned it on its head, I saw it the other way, which I thought was really well done. And I thought the actors carried it. I didn't laugh at them or like chuckle at how ridiculous they were because I thought they were good.
Yeah, exact same. I loved it. Especially when I was waiting the whole time to be like, well, who's going to play the James to Buffy's Grace? And then all of a sudden that didn't matter because Buffy was James. I was like, this makes so much sense. Marty Noxon is a genius. And she is a genius because Unreal is genius. She got some good training in here.
So sort of the B plot of this episode was Spike and Drew and Angel moving into a new place in their weird threesome relationship. And they've got a nice big palatial mansion, you know, the type that is so common in California. I don't know. I've been to California. There's a lot of different kind of weird houses there, but they've got their big palace to live in, basically, because Angel burnt down the factory where they were living, or he didn't. He had a fight which involved in it. But
Giles burnt down the factory.
Giles burnt it down. Yeah, that's true.
Do not take that away from Giles.
So they're basically living there together. Drew's very happy about it. Angel is constantly taunting Spike about everything, basically. And, you know, I think that, you know, you have Spike sitting there in the middle of this kind of stuff, and I think it sort of keeps exacerbating how much personhood he has compared to Drew, who's crazy, and Angel, who's crazy but slightly more self-aware and stuff like that. So, yeah, how are you guys feeling about sort of the Angel, Spike, and Drew dynamic, which is obviously revealed at the end that Spike is sort of just biding his time. He's sitting there taking Angel's ridiculous taunts about, you know, being in a wheelchair or being not able to be Drew's boyfriend and all of that kind of stuff, but then it turns out that he can actually walk and that he's just sort of waiting to show people that. Yeah, I don't know. Any thoughts about that? Caitlin, straight off the bat, it reminds me of when Quinn couldn't walk in Glee and then decides to, like, run out at the appropriate moment. So there's that. But one of Glee's stronger plot lines, I'm sure you can agree.
Oh, that's so funny. I didn't even think about that, but it's so true. Oh my god. We're just missing, like, a whole storyline about wheelchair ramps.
Yeah, this makes a little bit more sense than the Quinn plot did, but do you think that, you know, Angel has thoughtfully installed wheelchair ramps in the new mansion?
There's probably, like, enough just so he can get around, but not enough to be, like, useful, so he could give him the most amount of crap without having to, like, go out of his way to, like, help him. Because, like, Angelus strikes me as being so, like, forward-thinking enough to be like, this is how I can best screw with Spike at this point. So that's kind of where I see that, which is kind of terrible. But we did know that Angel was, like, or Angelus was one of the worst of the worst. That's why he got his soul in the first place. So it shouldn't be shocking.
Danielle, how do you feel about Spike and Drew? Obviously, you haven't been on to talk about them before. So now that we have this weird little party of them, we can... how do you feel about that dynamic at the moment and those characters, like, you know, what they can sort of... what they're showing us at the moment with these characters?
In general, I really like Spike. I find his motivations and just the way he works fascinating. I am very irritated by Drusilla. I'm over it. And I guess their dynamic is okay. I prefer the dynamic between Angelus and Spike rather than, like, anything with Drusilla. The only thing that I really look at Drusilla for is kind of the way in which her visions work and the way in which Buffy's visions work, because, I mean, they're both having them at the same time. And so I like seeing if there's any sort of, like, similarities, or it's not normal to have visions, and to have two people having visions at the same time is interesting to me. So that's kind of what I look to her for, and not much else.
There is a theory about that I cannot say much about, because you don't know any of the basis of it. So it wouldn't even sound that spoilery. It will be more spoilery than it sounds. And Caitlin, do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
So there is a theory about Drew, if anyone still cares, when it ends up not being spoilery, we can talk about, basically. The visions, are not super explained at this point in time, especially Drusilla's. I don't really love she seems very naive. She seems very oblivious to, like, Spike being upset by stuff. She seems very happy to play along with Angel, and doesn't really seem oblivious. It doesn't really seem to realize that Spike is upset by it. And I feel like he could do better in that case. He could, if he's that, you know, if he's that good a boyfriend to her, he could probably, you know, end up with someone who's a bit better to him. But I don't know. They're a weird mix, though, that lot. So I don't know. Yeah. Brittany, how about you at the moment with their whole thing and the fact that Spike can walk? What do you think he's going to do with that?
I was so excited that Spike could walk and that he's going to just... I don't know what he's going to do, but it's going to be great, because Spike going against Angelus can never be bad. I kind of agree with Danielle. Drew's got to go. I thought that once she, like, I thought that the way she acted was just how she was because she was so weak. But now that she's, like, super strong, she's still awful. And, like, she just plays weak, and it's really annoying.
No, she just is the worst. I don't like her.
I thought that I was supposed to like her, like, and I would keep waiting for, like, this moment where I'm like, oh, right, that's why I'm supposed to like Drew. But she's awful. She serves a purpose. She has her visions and stuff like that, and that's all fine and dandy. But as long as we only get her in these little bits, then I'll be fine with her. Like, I don't like her and Angelus's relationship either. Like, I don't... I don't like that part of the vampire mythology where torture is the way to someone else's, like, soulless heart. It just, like, bothers me. So I don't like that part of it. I mean, love everything about Angelus. Don't like when they talk about that particular thing out loud, I guess. Because I don't like her taking enjoyment of the fact that her entire family was tortured and killed. Because she's like, oh, it just proves how much he loves me, sort of thing. You know, I don't like that.
We've only got two episodes to go for the rest of the season, basically. We've got Spike, who wants to go against Angelus. Buffy, who's kind of come to terms with what happened with Angel and is now like, Angel, you know, Angelus got to go. You know, I think that one of the aspects of this episode is that, you know, we've had previous episodes where she's like, you know, I'm sorry, I couldn't kill him for you, Giles, and stuff like that. And now she sort of comes to terms with what happened with Angel and that Angelus is not that. We've got Angelus being disgusted by his love for Buffy and trying to exfoliate his skin off. Do you feel like that there's any setup or any clue here for what might happen in a finale? Because there's not too much time. It's not like, you know, Angel's the big bad, but it's not like we knew he was, like, planning to bring about whatever the harvest or, I don't know, whatever the master was doing, Armageddon. I don't know, I can't remember. Any theories about how the season might end at this point?
I honestly have no idea, and I feel like I should have some semblance of an idea, because when Once Upon a Time ended in the fall, everyone was like, oh, they totally stole that from Buffy, and I still have no idea what anyone is talking about.
How did it end?
I don't want to say, because I don't want to bring up an obvious point, but I can't even make the connection. I'm sure Caitlin knows what I'm talking about, but...
I absolutely do, yeah. and true.
I know, and that's fine that they completely ripped it off.
Is this with Hook? Is this with Killian?
Yeah, but I still can't figure it out, and I feel so dumb. I actually probably know what happens in Becoming and Becoming Part 2, but I literally cannot put two and two together.
Interesting. Danielle, do you know what they're talking about? Do you watch this show?
I gave up on Once Upon a Time. I bailed, so I don't. I haven't really kept up with any of the recaps or anything, so.
I've heard very small amounts of osmosis about what has happened with that character. I don't know how it happened or why
it
happened.
It's just like when it happened, everyone was like, oh my god, Buffy, 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 and I was
if
like,
it's what I, think
I don't
it is,
know what that
if
means.
If it's what I think it is, then it does sound like they directly took it, but that's okay. We'll see. Buffy's 7 seasons. You know, you never know, like,
I'll
when...
let you know tonight, because I'm probably going to watch the 2 episodes tonight.
Me too. Especially after this.
Caitlin, how are you feeling about this finale coming up? How do you rank this finale as compared to other season finales?
Very hard to watch.
Ooh.
Oh, I have a hard time now rewatching it.
I don't know if that's how I want to end tonight.
So I feel about rewatching the finale the way I felt about rewatching the episode where Angel turns in the first place, which was dread, because I knew what was coming.
There is an aspect of the finale I really love, which you shouldn't, obviously Caitlin should know, but the others should not.
Yes.
Yeah, which is amazing. It doesn't quite make up for the dread, but it's amazing.
But that dread is a thing for, like, Buffy finales in general. Like, Buffy finales tend to be pretty traumatic all the way around.
Yeah, that's true. We've got a whole other episode to talk about before then, but obviously the next one, Go Fish, is a bit of a monster of the week. So we'll go through our favourite scenes and quotes from I Only Have Eyes for You, and then move on to the next episode. So my favorite scene was the trio's conversation over the yearbook when they were discovering the James and Grace story, when, you know, Xander and Willow and Buffy were all talking about, you know, how much sympathy they had, whether it was a lot or none or whatever. And I just thought that it gave some balanced perspectives that apparently I took the wrong ones away from a long time ago, but I liked watching it again. Brittany, yours was a pretty important point in the episode, which we didn't mention yet, but I'll let you talk about it now.
So my favorite scene was that more attention was given to the fact that Schneider, like, knows what's going on in Sunnydale, and the fact that he said that they live on a Hellmouth, and he's talking to that same policeman again about being like, if you can't cover this up and make people believe something, like, you probably shouldn't be in, like, working here. You said you could handle it. And, like, things are kind of spiraling out of his control, so it's kind of making his pursuit against Buffy make a little bit more sense, even though that all goes to crap in the next episode because he wants to win a freaking swim meet. I mean, I was like, we just had this huge breakthrough moment with you, and now you're throwing it all away. But I just like that they brought up this, like, thread of, like, knowledge again, because I kind of forgot about it, the fact that he knows more than we're giving him credit for. Yeah, and the more I look at him now, like, knowing that, he looks more like a creature. I know that's, like, literally how he looks, but he, like, it's something's, like, not right, and I'm like, you look kind of like a little demon.
Because there's him, there's the police officer, they mention the mayor, they're like, if you have a problem with this, take it up with the mayor, so the local government clearly knows about the Hellmouth as well.
I mean, the FBI knows.
I don't know, do you think that that goes any way to, like, helping to cover up all of the weird deaths and help, you know, the stuff move on more quickly? Like, because, you know, there's a lot of random deaths that people are like, yep, getting over that really fast. Like, even the teacher in this episode, it's like, you know, last week they're like, oh, everyone had a whole, you know, everyone, the school was so shaken by Miss Callender's death, and now another teacher's died, but, like, no one cares. So
I don't know if it's, like, how long it's been going on before Buffy got there. Like, you know, how long they've been covering all this stuff up that everyone kind of is immune to it. They just have short-term memory loss in this school. And it's just, like, a don't ask, don't tell type of thing. Like, if you see a monster, don't say anything.
Maybe carry on amnesia stuff.
Caitlin, how about you for your favorite scene?
So mine was the whole final scene with Buffy and Angel and when the ghosts move on, because just the parallels are very haunting and it's just very intriguing, which we talked about pretty in depth.
Yeah, it is a pretty important scene for the whole series, I would say. Like, it's one, it would be on a top 10 list, I'd say, for the whole entire series of Buffy. At least I'd put it on one, as far as I can remember.
My favorite scene was right when Willow started falling through the floor, which was very strange, when Giles runs and just helps her, and then they have that really nice moment between the two of them. We don't get enough moments with these two. And I thought that this one, though not a lot was said, I thought it was a really just great, tender moment, even though probably shouldn't use the word tender in, like, a student-teacher relationship after this.
This is the episode to say it.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, Brittany!
I feel, like, very uncomfortable as, like, a teacher on the panel here right now.
I mean, I feel uncomfortable a lot. Well, not a lot, but with knowing Giles, but then also trying to view him as other people do, his relationship with the crew is kind of strange. And it weirds me out.
It must be weird to the outsiders that he's constantly, like, hanging around with this group of teens. And they're always engrossed, walking down the hallways, engrossed in, like, conversations. Even if they can't hear what it is, you know, it's being said, they're always, like, hardcore talking, like, with each other, and that must be kind of weird. But
and now Cordelia is involved in those conversations as well, which must be stranger.
They just probably think it's some weird mythological thing happening that they're like, meh, just let that one go. It's not killing anyone.
Anyway, favorite quotes. Mine was, I mean, aside from, like, that speech of James, is like that whole, you don't just wake up one day and stop loving someone, love is forever. That's, like, iconic, like, ridiculously tragic, iconic stuff in terms of late 90s pop culture. And that's, so aside from that, my favorite was in that conversation with the three of them, Xander just saying, you know, Willow is kind of like, he was smart too, he was on the honor roll, and Xander says he killed a person and then he killed himself. Those are pretty much the two dumbest things you can do, which I just felt was very succinct, summing it up. It's not even, you know, casting the amount of judgment that Buffy casts, but it's a very appropriate sentiment, I think, to feel about seeing a story like that. Like, how stupid, like, how is a pretty good sentiment for that scenario.
Mine was from Xander, who said, "Something weird is going on. Isn't that our school motto?"
Caitlin, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, so mine is what ends up being a pretty telling exchange about with a lot of double meaning. So Buffy is, after she's been possessed, is railing against James, and Giles says, "To forgive is an act of compassion, Buffy. It's not done because people deserve it. It's done because they need it." And Buffy says, "No, James destroyed the one person he loved the most in a moment of blind passion, and that's not something you forgive, no matter why he did what he did. And no matter if he knows now that it was wrong and selfish and stupid, it's just something he's going to have to live with." To which Xander says, "He can't live with it, Buff. He's dead." Oh, the devil meanings of everything going on in this episode.
Yeah. And yeah, Danielle, your quote was pretty appropriate reply to this whole sentiment, which is, yeah. So do you want to talk about yours?
Yes. I mean, I loved that whole sentiment, and it was a really close second to this one, but I liked the way where it cut the tension. Basically, after, I think it was right after that quote.
It might have been on another occurrence of the same Buffy expressing the same kind of thoughts. Basically.
You're probably right. Yeah. Cordelia just goes, "Okay, over-identify much?"
Yeah, which is obviously
the whole episode. So,
you know, succinct and beautiful summary of what, you know, Buffy said in Caitlin's quote, which is, you know, right from the start, you know, she has self-hatred. She hates James, and it's self-hatred because she sees that, you know, the destroying the moment you loved in a moment of blind passion and you can't go back from it is what she did to Angel, or what she thinks she did to Angel. So, yeah, just in case no one got the message, that's what it's about. All right, so we'll move on to Go Fish, which is another episode. I'm so glad I got these two episodes for a variety of reasons. Because I wanted to talk about my weird trauma in I Only Have Eyes for You, and then I wanted to, you know, this episode, Go Fish, is really relevant at the moment for some other reasons. So in this episode, Buffy learns that instead of wearing such revealing clothing, she should start wearing Willow's Eskimo parka on account of that way she'll only attract wholesome Oz-like boys. As the members of the school's swim team are found dead in succession, Xander slaps on a tight speedo to do some undercover investigative work. When Buffy witnesses Prison Break's Wentworth Miller transform into a sea creature, she confronts the slimy and delusional swim coach. As it turns out, the coach has been forcing the transformations via fishy Soviet drugs, so Buffy sees to it that he gets a little extra TLC from his fish boys. Meanwhile, Cordelia concedes that she'd choose bathtub toys and scales over popularity and status any day. Oh, that's nice. So, yeah, first of all, this is a straight-up Monster of the Week episode that isn't really relevant to the wider plot, except for some small moments of character development with, you know, some of the characters' relationships. Straight up, thumbs up, thumbs down. Did you like this as a Monster of the Week episode? Like, whether it's the way the monsters looked, like, you know, the plot, anything like that. So, Danielle, did you like this one as a generic monster story?
I thought it was fine. I was going along with it. It was okay. I'm not sure how I feel about the end, because I thought that was kind of strange. Yeah. But I was fine with it. I know not a lot of people, I guess, like this one. Is that the usual consensus?
I mean, it's no Bad Eggs. You know, I don't hate this one, and I've got some fond feelings towards it at the moment, but I also have some questions. Brittany, how about you? You hated it?
Hated everything about it, except the fish. The fish were really well done. Like, they are the most well-done Monster of the Week I think we've seen. Like, look at how they did the werewolves compared to these guys.
Oh, I don't want to talk about the werewolves.
These guys were so well done. And the fact that they were, like, in the pool in those outfits, like, it was just...
Yeah, and, like, it was when they were really swimming good. In the sea and yeah. stuff, I was like, wow, that's, like, actually, like, a waterproof, like, functioning suit, like, you know... Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked the way that they were done, but everything else, I didn't like the writing, I didn't like the coach was so vile, Snyder was awful, like I was saying, he, like, forgot his role, like, I don't know, maybe he, like, got some of the steam in his head or something, and I just didn't like any of it.
Caitlin, how about you? How did you feel about it?
Not one of my favorites. I don't hate it with the passion of a few of the episodes, but it's not one that I ever rewatch. And on doing rewatch, I found kind of, I didn't like what Brittany didn't like. It just felt kind of obviously these were like high school tropes of like the principal being too obsessed with winning and the coach. Mm-hmm. But it just felt like over the top with the tropiness to the point that it was just kind of like, okay, we get it. So it was a little much.
What's your most hated episode of what we've done so far, like of season one and two?
Bewitched. I don't remember the title.
Really? Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered?
Yeah.
I hated that really? One, too. That's my most hated, too.
That was the first one I genuinely wanted to turn off in the middle of the episode.
Hated it because, like, I thought it was, like, objectively bad, or hated it because you were offended by what they were saying and stuff like that?
I was so offended by Xander in every way in that episode.
I'm sure they talked about it on the episode, which I was not on.
I was on that one.
It's never addressed at all in the episode that he wasn't, because she was all like, oh, this was meant for me. It's never addressed that he didn't do it to get back with her. He did it to hurt her. He wanted her to be in love so he could hurt her, not so that he could, like, actually get back with her in a quote-unquote romantic way. That's never brought up again. I really like Cordelia in that episode, but he is just terrible. As far as I really hate, my most hated one is probably the Praying Mantis Lady one, which I can't. Teacher's Pet. Hate that one. Yeah. This one, coincidentally, stars Wentworth Miller, who's very much in pop culture headlines at the moment due to the internet being terrible, basically, because he addressed a meme about himself that had been posted online about him putting on weight. I'm really grateful to be on this episode because this is the only thing I've ever seen Wentworth Miller in, by the way. I have never seen any of his other shows. Like, he's been in, I know he's currently in one of Caitlin's things. Legends of Tomorrow. He's Captain Cold. I know that because I've looked at his IMDb to see if I'd seen him in anything ever, and I haven't except this. But the way that I'm just going to take a moment to get on my soapbox here, because the way that he addressed the issue with his meme situation was such, to me, at least in my taste, such amazing, like, evocative writing. Like, aside from the fact that it was tragic and, like, gross and terrible, his writing is unbelievable. And I went and I've been looking it up, and he is, like, he's such a good writer. He has got many, 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 like, posts on his Facebook, like, on his notes page of Facebook, which he kind of treats like a blog, like, long form kind of articles. He's incredible, and he's a screenwriter as well, and he was the screenwriter of Stoker, which is a very strange movie, and I didn't realize it was the same person that wrote it. He didn't star in it or anything, he just wrote it. But I am now, like, number one Wentworth Miller fan who has never seen anything that he's in, basically, because I am absolutely captivated with his writing, and I think that he needs, like, you know, to be, I don't know, like, doing a regular magazine column or write, you know, for television or movies or something. But I love him. I love his brain. He wrote one piece about, like, first person perspective of, like, you know, about, like, paparazzi and, like, how they act. And it was, like, unbelievable for anyone who has interest in that kind of, like, toxic celebrity culture. And, oh, he's so good. So I'm so glad that it's, like, a weird coincidence that we're on his episode this week. This is the only thing I've ever seen him in. I've never seen him act in anything else, but I'm a fan of Wentworth Miller, writer. I don't know yet if I'm a fan of Wentworth Miller, actor. But do any of you guys have any thoughts about Wentworth Miller that you'd like to share with the class?
He's delightful.
Yeah, you like him?
I do know someone, like, way back, people way back who are big fans of him from Prison Break. Obviously, he's working on the DC shows at the moment. And he's good in that, is he, Caitlin?
Yes.
Yes. I have seen, like, 3/4 of Prison Break. I dropped it after the third season, but he's very good in that. And then he took a pretty substantial break from acting, which when he was doing a bunch of writing. And this is one of The Flash, when he was cast as Captain Cold, was one of, I think it was, like, the first thing he had done acting in a really long time. He intended that to be, like, a one-off thing, and then he had kind of started recurring, and then he was so popular that that's how he ended up on Legends. But he very much is, like, that character is very over the top, so he basically chews up scenery in every scene that he's in, and it's just incredible. Like, he's so over the top in a way that's very enjoyable, because that's just how that character should be. So he's just, so he's my favorite part about Legends of Tomorrow. I think they have written him the most incredible arc in the whole Arrowverse, and he is, Wentworth Miller, wow, just delivers it so well.
Really?
So
we'll talk a little bit about basically the further episode. We have, you know, two of the guys, you know, that they have their party at the beach. You know, we introduced to the swim team who are currently succeeding. You know, the leading guy, Cameron, is, you know, he's hanging out with Buffy. He kind of defends Jonathan, and, you know, the next day he drives Buffy to school, and it's like, oh, Buffy's made a new friend, and then he hits on her and is gross, and she breaks his face. Let's talk about that quickly, because there are three, you know, three or four boys that get the transformation. There's the first guy at the beach, he was number one, he gets transferred, you know, his skin, you know, gets found first, and then we don't really learn much about him except that he was a bully. And then the second guy, Cameron, you know, goes from hero to zero pretty quickly as well. Did any of you think, oh my god, maybe Buffy's made a friend, and maybe, like, had a little bit of faith in humanity and thought that this guy wasn't going to be gross for, like, 5 minutes? Anyone?
I don't think so. I didn't like him from the outset.
Yeah?
He seemed very pushy.
Yeah, and obviously he's, like, obsessed with the sea, and then he's all like, I'm going to rape you. So that was good. I mean, not good. It was the opposite of good. That was bad.
Yeah, it was great, especially when Buffy got blamed for it, too.
Yeah, that was really fun. I really loved that.
Oh, yeah,
part
the blaming.
I couldn't believe how many tropes, it's like you said, like, I couldn't believe how many tropes there were in this episode of, like, terrible human behavior that I thought that we were past. Obviously, this is, like, 10, 15 years ago, but I, you know, she shouldn't be wearing that to school. Like, oh, you know, she was leading me on. How is that, like, a real thing that ever happened? How is that, like, a thing that people have actually been getting away with?
Everything is awful. It's just,
like, I just have no answers for that. Like, I have no answers for how that's actually a thing that anyone has ever taken seriously and thought was a valid thing to say. Like,
I get emails every once in a while in my office, or used to, with one of our managers kind of reinforcing dress code because she saw someone wear leggings or something and it was not appropriate because it was distracting. We're in an office of all women and, like, it's still an issue.
See, that's so stupid. I can get dress code because it's like, oh, like, this is too casual. This is not a professional level of, you know, we have to have, you know, corporate meetings and we need a certain dress code because of that.
Yeah,
no. Who the hell actually says, oh, it's too distracting? Like,
not at that level.
Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand how that's a real thing. Or in schools, it's like, oh, girls, you can't wear this because the boys will be distracted from learning because they can see your skin.
Your shoulders. Your shoulders are so distracting.
I mean, I know this isn't, like, rocket science or news for any of you, but I still just, whenever I really, I've never experienced anything like this myself. Like, thankfully, I went to a school that had uniforms. That kind of issue doesn't come into play. And I've never really heard anyone talk in real life the way that these kind of tropes happen. But the more I hear about them, I'm like, oh, this isn't just television. Like, this happens in real life. The whole, like, athletes and, like, passing them because, like, you know, in order to get the team to compete, like, who cares that much about how your school does at sports? Like, my school did not, it's like, it was not related to the academics, like, at all. Like, I don't understand, like, why people care that much about that. Is that real? Did that happen at your schools?
Partially. I think part of it, with wanting schools to do well for things, is money driven. Like, if schools do well, people who have gone there or just who are around might give them more money. They might get more funding for things.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's a driver. I'm not sure. It's hard to tell if that was a driver in this one. This one, it just seemed more like pride over anything. But I know that that's a driver for some places.
Yeah, it seemed like the adults in this one were, like, living vicariously through the swim team, like, we were never good enough for it, so we have to push them to do it for us or something. It's just, which is a trope in and of itself, which is also
I think they're trying to, like, again, play to every single trope, and, like, this was a way that they could fit in sports driving some sort of nonsense. Like, they didn't use football, they used swimming, so they could also get a monster of the week in there, and, you know, it's not like this is taking place in Texas, where football would be the driving thing. Like, you know, if you watch any show set in Texas, football drives the high school team. Like, that's, this is what it is. High school and football are, football's more important than anything. As long as you get, like, a D and you can play good football, it doesn't matter. I like Danielle's point about, like, sure, everyone only cares that the people are passing, but no one seems to care that Willow is still teaching.
It bothers me so much.
How many dead teachers are there as well? Are there students teaching the class of lady who got shot in, like, and they have eyes for you?
Yeah, or? And there's, like, a science teacher missing. Like, there's a lot going on.
Well, the only reason why I feel like Willow is still teaching is because computers are so new at this point. This is my understanding, that computers and technology was so new that she was the only qualified person within, like, 100 miles to teach this class, and so that's why she's teaching. But she should not still be teaching. She has classes to go to.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, is she only covering her own class that she would have already been in, you know, like, or is she covering every class she had? Like, is that... It's so weird. Anyway, that clearly doesn't make any sense. And people look, you know, no one seems to be... Even the students seem to be going along with it. Yeah, Snyder is obviously, you know, tries to tell her to pass Wentworth Miller, Gage, because he's failing and he needs to be eligible to be on the swim team by not failing. And Snyder, as we've mentioned, forgot all of his loyalties to protecting the school from the Hellmouth and is, you know, does Snyder know about the fish?
I mean, he has to know something's going on, and why wouldn't he be looking into that as, like, a supernatural thing? And, like, he doesn't even, like, ask Buffy what's going on. Like, I just don't understand how his loyalty all of a sudden was like, oh, right, I'm totally going to, like, support the school that I'm in unless his, like, cover is at risk or something and he needs to play along. I don't get it. If there was even, like, a murmuring of, like, a sea monster on the loose, I feel like he would be looking into it a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He doesn't seem to investigate anything. He just seems to want to cover it up. Like, he's not, like, doing a little detective work on his own. He's just like, no, let's cover this up. Make sure we cover this up. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess Willow as a teacher, how do you feel about her as a teacher, aside from the fact it's ridiculous? You know, I think Mitch, who wrote this doc, has said, like, you know, would this be something she did in the future, or, like, a way to stay at Sunnydale High post-graduation, like, if not for Giles and the library? Or, like, do you think that it'll keep being based around the school?
I hope not.
Yeah. I hope not either.
Like, I always see through, or it's always just very thinly veiled, the reasons why they keep people in the school for TV shows and they just keep moving. It's really irritating to me. I mean, I could maybe see her as a computer teacher, for lack of a better term. I think she's doing relatively well. She seems like she's not, like, she seems relatively confident and more confident as things go along. But if this is a reason to keep Sunnydale and Sunnydale High in the picture, I would veto that.
Yeah, she would need to go get a teaching degree first.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah, not like she would just stay there. Is she getting paid for this, by the way? Like,
oh, definitely not.
That's what I want to know.
No way.
Okay, so Cameron is terrible and then basically becomes a fish guy. And Xander witnesses this. I think at first he thinks that he's eaten Cameron, that the fish guy has eaten Cameron. But yeah, Xander is the first one to sight the fish guy. And then they sort of slowly discover that they are becoming fish guys when Buffy sees Gage transform. But before then, so we get rid of Cameron, the team is sort of investigating the fish guys, and Gage goes from sort of pissy and whiny into Buffy's new BFF after he has an encounter with Angel. And yeah, so this was kind of an interesting little moment in the episode, I guess, where Angel confronts or buddy buddies, you know, Gage in the street, and then attacks him. Buffy saves him, and now Gage is Buffy's new best friend, which I thought was really cute. I am, like, always here for the ridiculous trope of a big bully guy getting handed his ass and then immediately, instead of posturing about it, immediately becoming lovely. Like, it happened a couple of episodes ago with Larry as well, with the, like, the guy who Xander thought was a werewolf but turned out to be gay. And, you know, you see him sort of immediately stop being a dick and start, like, you know, helping people when other people are bullying them. And I don't know why, I'm a bit of a sucker for that trope. I liked it with Gage. Like, I liked that it was cute and it was non-sexual and stuff like that, but that he was just like, Buffy, yay, Buffy, after that. So I enjoyed that. I don't know if I'm alone in that, but I really did. So,
I loved that too, which then, yeah, like, made me sad with the ending where they just kind, yeah, of all go off and nobody really cares about Gage after, yeah, he sort of dies or doesn't die. Because, yeah, I really, yeah, liked their dynamic that they had.
Because we, you know, we get rid of Cameron, and then Gage is the one whose story we actually follow to see what happens with the fish guys, like the Buffy actually discovers, she sees the transformation and all of that kind of stuff. It turns out that, you know, that they, at first they think that the nurse, yeah, at first it turns out that, you know, the nurse did know about the doping of the students, which Xander discovers when he joins the swim team, and, you know, finds out that it's in the steam of the steam room that they dope with. It turns out that the coach, who's like, oh my God, how could have this have happened, is the one doing it to them all along. So he's clearly the worst. I'm not a fan of that coach, but him and Snyder are, you know, very much in cahoots of, like, we got to win, we must win. I don't know how much Snyder is meant to know about the doping, but it's still pretty gross all around. How did we feel about Xander on the swim team?
I mean, he saw a shot to do something and he took it. Good for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, all I literally need to do is jump in the pool and I can make this team.
I think it would have been good for him. Like, if the coach wasn't crazy and, like, doping up the kids, I think having something like a swim team to sort of fire him out, like, calm him down, mellow him out a little bit, I think that would have been good for him.
I actually liked Xander in this episode. He didn't do a single thing wrong. Like, there was plenty of, I think we were talking about before we started, you know, plenty of gross things happened in this episode, plenty of people who had gross attitudes or gross behavior. Xander, not one of them for once, which was
amazing.
Great. Like, you know, like,
refreshing.
You know, high five for Xander for managing to be, like, the actual good guy in this episode. You know, he saw something that he could contribute to in terms of the investigation, and he did it. He had, you know, a good relationship with Cordy. He wasn't weird about Buffy or Willow. He was funny. He was observant. Like, he was, like, prime Xander, and I don't understand why it's so difficult to keep that going from episode to episode. This is a great Xander. I don't really understand why it has to be any other way than this. But yeah, Cordy was into him when, you know, she saw him on the swim team. And then, you know, again, when she thought he'd become a fish man, you know, she made a lot of posturing throughout the episodes. It's like, you know, Xander, what about me? What's going to happen if he turns into a fish and I have to date him? But then at the very end, when it turns out that, you know, she thought he was the fish guy, she was still quite loving and sweet to him. So I don't know, they're... She cracks me up. I find them hilarious. I find them hilarious, and I find her really, really smart and funny, and I love her. Yeah, there's a few aspects of this that were a bit terrible. Yeah, first of all, the coach is keeping the fish guys, I don't know, what, a drain somewhere, and basically, like, feeding them on people. So the nurse, who is a nice lady, tries to make him stop doing the doping, and he feeds her to the fish guys. So... that was not very nice. And then later, you know, when Buffy finds out about what's going on, he gives her to the fish guys, not as food. What is a noun for that? As a rape victim, or I don't know if there's any way to soft pedal that. Basically, he's like, yeah, they've already eaten, but they have other needs. That happened.
Disgusting.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible in... really no other explanation for that. Anyone got anything complex to say about sort of the way that was done, or the casual casualosity, the casual take on that, or they didn't really comment too much on it. They just sort of did it, and then it was over.
It's so kind of uncomfortable that there's two essential attempted sexual violations this episode. So uncomfortable.
Yeah, and the fact that both of them are just met with, like, okay, that's over. It happened.
Like, no, yeah, not even like, oh, that's over, it happened. It's like, that's run-of-the-mill. Like, that's just, yeah, we know that it's not good, but that's, like, day-to-day life, right? Like, that's kind of the attitude that it seemed to have to me, that it was like, it was kind of like that the people writing it, even though that they were on Buffy's side about it and clearly didn't think that it was okay, also didn't think that it was changeable, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to the same thing that we've been seeing, where it's like, oh, well, that's how boys are. That's how jocks are. Which,
yeah,
it's not. This is not okay. This is not normal. And the way that they've been writing this lately, they're trying to make it seem like all of these things are normal when they are not.
It's kind of like, yeah, as I said, it's kind of like, it's almost like they know that it's not. Yeah, I think what you have to differentiate here is the difference between quote-unquote normal and quote-unquote, like, good or okay. It's like, it feels like the writers were seeing things and or writing things, and they knew that they didn't want it to be seen as good. They didn't want it to be seen as okay, but they also didn't think it was able to be changed. They did think it was normal. And that they didn't take a step to be like, you know, they didn't think about the fact that one of the ways that you can help make a perspective on what's normal is to write, you know, how things should be. Like, if, you know, if people are influenced by what they see, or they, you know, or if they're like kind of like, oh, you know, if art begets life and vice versa, if people kind of have this behavior that they see replicated, you know, one way to challenge that is to change what people are seeing as normal. Like, you know, I don't know how possible it is to just change human nature, but the more that you change what people see as normal behavior in whatever they consume, you know, the more people will feel comfortable making those changes, I guess. And it feels like Buffy didn't think they were able to do that at the time, or, you know, it didn't occur to them that it was a thing that was changeable. And that's very weird to me. And then at the end, when they dropped the coach in the hole with the sea monsters, and Xander's like, wow, those boys really love their coach, are we meant to think that they were eating him or raping him?
I think we're meant to never think about it.
Yeah.
I would have originally, as a young person, thought eating, and now when I'm watching it, I think not eating. Because given the setup. So that's really great images. And
do you think that they were fueled instead of like lust or urges by any sort of rage? Like, do you think they know what happened to them, that they did become monsters and that he was behind it? Yeah. Or do you think that they just kind of, once they became monsters, they're a whole other being without that previous, like, memory of it? Because I kind of took it like they were maybe taking him apart because of what they did to him, but then I didn't know if they were conscious of what happened.
I don't know. I don't think they are, honestly. I don't think they are conscious of what happened to them, but
My reading of the ending changes completely with that, however we look at that. Because if they're just totally unthinking monsters, you're kind of going, okay, they're just going to be home because that's all they know. But if they're still conscious in there and they go out to sea at the end, that's so depressing.
Yeah, I know. They're like, this is the only place we can go. Like,
no one cares enough to try to fix us.
Yeah, literally no one tried at all. No one tried. Mitch has said the nurse was in on it, but I can't say I feel so bad for her being eaten, even though she was trying to stop it after the transformation started. I feel bad for her for being eaten, thanks very much. I don't think there was anything wrong with the nurse. I don't think it's like she was in on it and changed her mind. She was trying every step of the way to be like, yeah, this is wrong.
I mean, she did know
about
the doping. She just didn't know about the, like, turning into the fish part. So,
yes,
but I mean, it's sketchy that she knew and was helping to give kids steroids, but I don't think that's, like, something you deserve to be ripped apart by monsters for.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
And then Jonathan obviously was another, you know, not central character, but he was around in this episode as the victim of the original bullying, and, you know, then Willow interrogating him later on because they think that maybe he conjured these monsters. So he's there. Does anyone have any kind of thoughts about Buffy and side characters and these kind of characters that appear, like, you know, from time to time, like him and Harmony and, like, all of the students that are occasionally around?
No, I mean, he's going to do something because I just know about Danny Strong's career, so
yeah.
he'll be around for a while.
You know he is relevant in future, yeah. My favourite scene was when he interrupted the swim meet to wave at Buffy from the pool up to where she was on the stands because he's her new BFF, and I just found it so unbelievably cute. Again, as I said, not sexual, not like, oh, it's my new girlfriend, just this really cute puppyish devotion to Buffy, and I loved it, and then I felt sad for him for being a fish. Brittany, how about you?
Mine was that we could finally cross off the fact that, you know, they live in California and they had a bonfire at the beach. I was just waiting for it to happen. It's over. We can cross it off the list of things we had to see because the show is set at a California high school.
Caitlin.
Mine was after Xander comes out with, like, his hottie slow-mo thing and the girls realize he's on the swim team and he comes over to them and they just mercilessly tease him, like...
Yeah,
like,
when...
He's like, I'm undercover. He's like, not under much. Like, I just find that whole exchange so endearing.
Yeah. As I said, it's such a great Xander episode. It's so good, and I don't understand why it's this difficult for them to, like, keep it up at this level.
Because he doesn't have a romantic plotline in this episode. And every time he has a romantic plotline, things get ugly.
And Danielle, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was, we already talked about it, but Cordelia talking to the swimming fish boy, mistaking him for Xander. Just the way in which she was talking to him was lovely. I enjoyed it very much.
She has such surprising depth.
I love her so much. I can't even express. Yeah, like, she's so smart, and she constantly, like, in these little undercutting, subtle ways, like, calls out so much bullshit, and I love her so much at the moment that, like, she was never my fave before, and now I love her a lot. So, yeah. I will say that was the one redeeming factor of, as said, Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered. I like the bit at the end when she tells off the other girls and is like, you know, I do what I want and I date who I want. And then she's like, oh my God, it's going to be, a, you know, like, walks over to him being like, what have I done? And they're kind of like nice to each other. It's such a nice reconciliation. It's just a pity that it was, like, preceded by, like, such unbelievable grossness. But moving on, favorite quotes. Mine was, Buffy and Xander, when they're basically keeping watch on Gage to make sure that he's, you know, being protected from the fish monster, you know, before they realize he is the fish monster. And Buffy sort of says, where's Gage? And Xander says, I don't know. He was right behind me putting his sneakers on, but it's not the Velcro kind. So give him a couple of extra minutes, and then sort of taps her and is like, tag, you're it. And I just found this hilarious. Like, it's just such good delivery, like, so, such a funny little, like, sarcastic, like, they're both like, I can't believe that we have to do these for these stupid guys. What the hell is this fish monster business? And it's just such a funny run-of-the-mill, like, yeah, this is our lives now situation. And I loved it. And again, it's a shame that Gage had to become the fish boy. So, Brittany, your line, and you said you had a story.
I do, because no line in this episode was good, besides the ones that you guys picked. So... I picked a line that then I could talk about a moment with. So it's when Xander is describing to Cordelia the fish monster, and he's like, no, 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 the mouth's a lot bigger and downward like this. And then he, like, kind of, like, poses like it, and then he's like, and more teeth. And she's like, I'm doing the best I can. I was half expecting it to be, like, a Sokka drawing when it was shown, but then it was a Milo drawing. So...
Yeah.
I figured I could make this a fun tie into Avatar and Korra.
Yeah. Yeah, so Cordelia is a Milo, hidden depths, artistic talent.
Not a Sokka. Okay. Yeah. That's all I got.
Caitlin, how about you?
So mine continues the theme of Cordelia's hidden depth. When they're talking about, like, Snyder has told Willow she needs to pass Gage, and Xander's not happy about it. And he says, and what about all that nutty all men are created equal thing? To which Cordelia says, propaganda spouted out by the ugly and less deserving. And Xander says, I think that was Lincoln. Cordelia says, disgusting mole and stupid hat. To Willow says, actually, it was Jefferson. And Cordelia goes, kept slaves, remember? It's just this, like, she knows things. I love her.
Yeah, and it's true, and it's hypocritical, and, you know, as, you know, dedicated Hamilton fans, Caitlin's not even a dedicated Hamilton fan, and she still picked that line.
I know. I was thinking about, remember, who's doing the planting.
I appreciated Cordelia's calling out of the hypocrisy of the All Men Are Created Equal by Thomas Jefferson. Danielle, I almost picked this one that you had because I thought it was very funny. So go ahead, this one.
I love this exchange. I love Cordelia says, it's about time our school excelled at something. To which Willow replies, you're forgetting our high mortality rate. And then Xander caps it all off with saying, we're number one.
Yeah, I found that so hilarious for some reason. Yeah, so that's it, basically. That's it for those two episodes. And then we're going to have the finale of season two next week. Get ready, everyone. And if you want to reach out and talk to us about these episodes or predictions for the finale, no spoilers, even Once Upon a Time spoilers, you can email us on rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, tweet us at re_watchable, comment on this post on hyperbole.com, or join us on Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. You can also leave us a review on iTunes, which helps us look all legit. If you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will feed you 2.5 men's maid because she sure does know how to take care of her boys. I assume that actress who was the nurse was 2.5 men's maid. I don't know. This is probably funny for a reason in Mitch's brain that voice. I don't understand. Yeah. So we've got quite a few tweets and stuff to get through this week. Let's have a quick look here.
Sure. Emmy Foss at Emmy Classic says, for as weird as I am for liking bad eggs, Go Fish is my least favorite episode ever. It's probably the only episode I ever skip.
Oh, that's real deep. That's some real hatred there. It's not my least favorite episode ever. And I will always appreciate the Wentworth Miller of it from now on. I did not know this was Wentworth Miller when I first would have watched this episode. This is the first time I've watched it knowing it was Wentworth Miller, despite having since discovered Wentworth Miller exists. I mean, I knew who Wentworth Miller was before last week, but I'd never watched anything with him in it.
So Kate Arnold at Kate Louise 2 says, I thought Angel's narration and passion was straight out of Grey's Anatomy 2, or maybe Grey's is straight out of this. So every episode of Grey's Anatomy begins with either Meredith or some character who the episode is going to be focusing on giving basically what Angel did in Passion, a narration of the theme of the episode. Yeah, I did think it was very Grey's Anatomy as well when I was watching it.
So Bela Beth, who is at Bela Bai, says, watching Buffy season 2 killed by death so I can listen to Rewatchable, but it's such a creepy episode, one I normally skip. Now I remember why.
The episode is so creepy.
The eyeballs were too much. I couldn't handle it.
Which is at Tan Tanny Tan, says, it's official. The song in this episode, by the way, also called I Only Have Eyes for You, is on my creepy music list. You always hear it. When it's about to get real scary and potentially traumatizing in movies or TV shows set in the 50s. Yeah, Caitlin, do you want to take the first hyperbole comment as well?
Sure. Untherian says, Go Fish marked the debut of a beloved actor, Wentworth Miller, Captain Cold from Flash and Legends. His first role was Gage in this episode, and we've given a lot of love to Wentworth Miller, so...
Haley Lewis says, Cordy calling out Buffy and basically laying flat the entire premise of the show and killed by death was fantastic. So this isn't about you being afraid of hospitals because your friend died and you want to conjure up a monster so that you can fight it so that you can save everyone and not feel so helpless?
I mean, valid. Yeah. Yeah.
Good job, Cordelia. She's basically like, let's not waste any more time trying to figure out what the meaning of this is. Here it is. Let's just get rid of this monster.
Danielle, do you want to take this last hyperbole comment and we can talk about our thoughts on this theory?
Love to. So Mandy Kay wrote in and said, something about the episode Passion has always bothered me. The school is a public place, right? So why did Angel need to be invited in via the sign in order to get inside, given the hospital situation? Shouldn't the rule of needing to be invited to enter a dwelling not apply for a school then? I mean, that's a good point. My only counter to that would be that the schools are sort of public buildings, but they're also closed off to a lot of people a lot of the time. Like, you can't, like, a random person off the street can't just walk into a school. Yeah. Like, you can walk into a hospital, I guess, if you want to, but you can't just walk into a school.
Yeah, that's my only theory as well. Like, my school had walls around it, and if you some random man just started walking through it, people would be like, Yeah, there are rules, as far as I know, about, you know, not that American television has ever enforced these rules, you know, especially on Glee.
We've seen vampires in the school before, and they didn't need to be invited. Yeah, that's true.
Maybe they sought knowledge, Caitlin. Maybe the sign, you know.
Maybe, or maybe Angel was just, like, taking the piss out of Jenny in that moment.
I really don't know, yeah. Maybe she didn't mean, like, what, you know, how did you get in as an inviter? Maybe she's like, what are you doing here in general? All right, so that is everything for these two episodes. We've got the finale next week of season two, and then moving on to season three, and then who knows after that? Well, I think that that's going to be a moment where we make some decisions about how we're proceeding with Buffy. I don't know if Caitlin has made those decisions yet, but we've got a whole nother season to go before any potential changes happen. So, yeah, basically, hopefully you've been enjoying it. Let us know how you feel about the show so far and, you know, what you're expecting from the finale. See you soon. So until then, I have been Natalie.
I'm Brittany.
I'm Caitlin.
And I've been Danielle.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. See you later.
Bye.